Chapter 5. I met them at the embarkation zone. I had the knapsack, which was part of my human disguise, but the only important thing I was carrying was the comm interface from Art. It would allow us to communicate once I was down on Ravi Hyrule and let me continue to have access to Art's knowledge bases and unsolicited opinions. I was used to having a hub system and a sex system for backup, and Art would be taking their place. Without the part where those two systems were partly designed to rat me out to the company and trigger punishment through the governor module, Art's freedom to weigh in on everything I did was punishment enough. I had inserted the comm interface in a built-in compartment under my ribs. All three of my clients were waiting, each with a small bag or pack, since hopefully they would only be staying a couple cycles. I hung back until they finished saying goodbye to the other members of their collective. They all looked worried. The collective was listed in the social feed as a group marriage and had 5 children of various sizes. Once the others had left and Rami, Maro, and Tapan were alone, I came forward. Tlacy bought us passage on a public shuttle, Rami told me. That could be a good sign, right? Sure, I said. It was a terrible sign. The employment voucher got me through into the embarkation zone, and there was no weapon scan. Ravi Hyrule allowed private weapons and had a low security presence in public areas, which was one reason small groups of humans needed to hire private security consultants to go there. As we approached the shuttle's lock, I sent to Art, "Can you scan the shuttle for energy anomalies without transit ring security detecting the activity?" "No, but I'll tell it I'm running scanning diagnostics and testing systems." As we reached the lock, Art reported, "No anomalies, 90% match to factory specs." That was normal, and meant if there was an explosive device, it was inert at the moment, buried somewhere inside the hull. 5 other guest workers waited to board, and my scan read no energy signatures. They had stuffed packs and bags, indicating packing for a long-term stay. I let them board first, then slid in front of Maro and went through the lock, scanning as I went. The shuttle was bot-driven, and the only crew was 1 augmented human who seemed only there to check employment vouchers and shuttle passes. She looked at me and said, "There's only supposed to be 3 of you." I didn't answer, being in the middle of wrestling the security system for control. It was an entirely separate system from the bot pilot, which was non-standard for the shuttles I was used to. Tapan's chin jutted out. "This is our security consultant." I had control of Shuttle Sexis and deleted its attempt to alert the bot pilot and the crew member to the fact that it was compromised. The crew member frowned, checked the voucher again, but didn't argue. We went on into the compartment where the other passengers were getting seated. They were stowing their possessions or talking quietly. I hadn't eliminated them as potential threats, but their behavior was lowering the probability at a steady rate. I took a seat next to Rami as my clients got settled and pinged Art again. Art said, "I'm scanning for targeting anomalies and situation is currently clear." It meant it couldn't see anything on the moon aiming at us. If that was the plan, it wouldn't happen until we were underway. If somebody fired at the transit ring from the moon's surface, I was pretty sure that would be a huge deal and there would be legal ramifications, if not immediate violent retaliation by ring security. I told Art, "If they fire at us en route, it's not like we can do anything about it." Art didn't answer, but I knew it well enough by now to know that meant something. I said, "You don't have a weapon system." There hadn't been one on the schematics. At least the schematics that Art made available in its unsecured feed. "Do you?" Art admitted, "I have a debris deflection system." There's only one way to deflect debris. I had never been on an armed ship, but I knew they were subject to a whole different level of licensing and bond agreements. If one of them accidentally shoots something it's not supposed to, somebody has to pay for the damage. I said, "You have a weapon system." Art repeated, "For debris deflection." I was starting to wonder just what kind of university owned Art. Rami was watching me worriedly. "Is everything okay?" I nodded and tried to look neutral. Tapan leaned past her to ask, "Are you in the feed? I can't find you." I told her, "I'm on a private channel with a friend in the ring who's monitoring the shuttle's departure, just making sure everything's okay." They nodded and sat back. The shutter went through the deck that meant the shuttle had uncoupled from the ring and started to move. I cozied up to the bot pilot. It was a limited function model, not nearly as complex as even a standard transport driver bot. I had the shuttle Sexus tell it I was authorized by ring security, and it pinged me cheerfully. The crew member was sitting in the cockpit with it, using her feed to catch up on admin tasks and read her social feed download, but there was no human pilot aboard. I leaned back in my seat and relaxed a little. Media was tempting, and from the echoes I could pick up in the feed, that's what most of the humans were doing. But I wanted to keep monitoring the bot pilot. This may seem overcautious, but that's how I was built. Then, 24 minutes, 47 seconds into the flight, as we were on approach, the bot pilot screamed and died as killware flooded its system. It was gone before Shuttle Sexus or I could react. I flung up a wall around us both, and the killware bounced off. I saw it register task complete and then destroy itself. Oh, shit. Art! I used Shuttle Sexus to grab the controls. We needed the course correction in 7.2 seconds. The crew member, jolted out of her feed by the alarms, stared at the board in horror, then hit the emergency beacon. She couldn't fly a shuttle. I can fly hoppers and other upper atmosphere aircraft, but I had never been given the education module for shuttles or other space-going vehicles. I nudged Shuttle Sexus, hoping for help, and it set off all the cabin alarms. Yeah, that didn't help. "Let me in," Art said, as cool and calm as if we were discussing what show to watch next. I had never given Art full access to my brain. I had let it alter my body, but not this. We had 3 seconds and counting, my clients, the other humans on the shuttle. I let it in. It was like the sensation humans describe in books as having their heads shoved underwater. Then it was gone, and Art was in the shuttle, using my connection with Shuttle Sexus to leap into the void left by the erased bot. Art flowed into the controls, made the course correction and adjusted our speed, then picked up the landing beacon and guided the shuttle into approach on the main Ravi Hyrule port. The crew member had just managed to hail Port Authority and was still hyperventilating. Port Authority had the ability to upload emergency landing routines, but the timing had been too tight. Nothing they could have done would have saved us. Rami touched my arm and said, "Are you okay?" I'd squeezed my eyes shut. "Yes," I told Ter. Remembering that humans usually want more than that from other humans, I pointed up to indicate the alarms and added, "I've got sensitive hearing." Rami nodded sympathetically. The others were worried, but there hadn't been an announcement, and they could see our route in the feed from the port, which was still giving us an on-time arrival. The crew member tried to explain to Port Authority that there had been a catastrophic failure, the pilot bot was gone, and she didn't know why the shuttle was following its normal route and not slamming into the surface of the moon. Shuttle Sexus tried to analyze Art and almost got itself deleted. I took over Shuttle Sexus, turned off the alarms, and deleted the entire trip out of its memory. There were murmurs of relief from the passengers as the alarms stopped. I made a suggestion to Art, and it sent an error code to Port Authority, which assigned us a new priority and switched our landing site from the public dock to the emergency services dock. Since the killware had clearly been intended to destroy us en route, there might not be anybody waiting for us at our scheduled landing slot, but better safe than sorry. The feed was giving us a visual of the port, which was inside a cavern, carved out of the side of a mountain, surrounded by the towers of a debris deflection grid, an actual debris deflection system, as opposed to Art's concealed railgun or whatever it had. The lights of multiple levels of the port installation gleamed in the darkness, and smaller shuttles whizzed out of our way as we curved down toward the Port Authority's beacon. Mero was watching me with narrowed eyes. When the notice of changed landing site came through the feed, she leaned forward and said, You know what happened? Fortunately, I remembered that nobody expected me to be compelled to answer all questions immediately. One of the benefits to being an augmented human security consultant rather than a construct sec unit. I said, "We'll talk about it when we're off the shuttle." And they all seemed satisfied. Art landed us in the Port Authority's slot. We left the shuttle crew member trying to explain to the emergency techs what had happened as they connected their diagnostic equipment. Art was already gone, deleting any evidence of its presence, and the shuttle Sexis was confused, but at least still intact, unlike the poor pilot bot. Emergency services personnel and bots milled around the small embarkation zone. I managed to herd my clients through and out onto the clear enclosed walkway to the main port before anyone thought to try to stop them. I had already downloaded a map from the public feed and was testing the robustness of the security system. The walkway had a view of the cavern, with the multiple levels of landing slots and a few shuttles coming and going. At the far end were the big haulers for the mining installations. Security seemed to be intermittent, and based on the level of paranoia of whatever contractor operated in the territory you were passing through, that could be both an advantage and an interesting challenge. The Transit Ring's public info feed had warned that a lot of humans apparently carried weapons here, and there were no screening scans. We came out into a central hub which had a high, clear dome allowing a view of the cavern arching overhead, with lights trained on it to show off the colorful mineral veins. I scanned to make sure nothing was recording us and stopped Rami. T and the others looked up at me and I said, "The person you're going to meet with just tried to kill you." Rami blinked. Mara went wide-eyed, and Tapan drew breath to argue. I said, "The shuttle was infected with killware. It destroyed the bot pilot. I was in contact with a friend who was able to use my augmented feed to download a new pilot module. That's the only reason we didn't crash." A module could have put the shuttle into a safe orbit, but wouldn't have been sophisticated enough to manage the tricky, flawless landing. I was hoping they wouldn't realize that. Tapan closed her mouth. Shocked, Maro said, "But the other passengers, the crew person, they would have killed everybody?" I said, "If you were the only casualties, the motive would have been obvious." I could see it was starting to sink in. I said, "You should return to the transit ring immediately." I checked the public feed for the schedule. There was a public shuttle leaving in 11 minutes. Tlacy wouldn't have time to trace my clients and infect it if they moved fast. Tapan and Maro looked at Rami. T hesitated, then set her jaw and said, "I'll stay. You two go."
"No," Maro said instantly. "We're not leaving you."
Tapan added, "We're in this together." Rami's face almost crumpled, their support weakening to her when the prospect of death hadn't. T controlled herself and nodded tightly. T looked at me and said, "We'll stay." I didn't react visibly because I'm used to clients making bad decisions, and I was getting a lot of practice at controlling my expression. "You can't keep this meeting. They lost track of you when the shuttle didn't dock at its scheduled slot. You have to keep that advantage."
"But we have to have the meeting," Tapan protested. "We can't get our work back otherwise."
"Yes, I often want to shake my clients. No, I never do. Tlacy has no intention of giving you back your work. She lured you here to kill you."
"Yes, but..."
Tapan began.
"Tapan, just hush and listen," Maro interrupted, clearly exasperated.
Rami looked stubborn, but asked,
"Then what should we do?"
Technically, this didn't have to be my problem. I was here now and didn't need them anymore. I could lose them in the crowd and leave them to deal with their murderous ex-employer all on their own. But they were clients. Even after I'd hacked my governor module, I'd found it impossible to abandon clients I hadn't chosen. I'd made an agreement with these clients as a free agent. I couldn't leave. I kept my sigh internal.
You can't meet Tlacy at her compound. You'll pick the spot. It wasn't ideal, but it would have to do. My clients picked a food service place in the center of the port. It was on a raised platform, the tables and chairs arranged in groups, with displays floating above advertising various port and contractor services and information about the different mining installations. The displays also functioned as camera and recording chaff, so the place was a popular spot for business meetings. Rami, Tapan, and Maro had picked a table and were nervously fiddling with the drinks they had ordered from one of the bots drifting around. They had put in a comm call to Tlacy and were waiting for a representative to arrive. The security system in this public area was more sophisticated than Shuttle Sexus, but not by much. I had gotten in far enough to monitor emergency traffic and get views from the cameras focused on our immediate area. I felt pretty confident. I was standing 3 meters from the table, pretending to look at the ad displays and examining the map of the installations I had found in the public feed. There were plenty of abandoned dig sites marked, as well as tube accesses that went off into apparently nowhere. Ganaka Pit had to be one of them. Art said in my ear, "There must be an accessible information archive. Ganaka Pit's existence would not be deleted from it. The absence would be too obvious to researchers." That depended on the research. Someone working on strange synthetics would obviously care about where they were found, but not necessarily about what company had dug them up, or why that company wasn't around anymore. But whoever had removed Ganaka Pit from the map would have been trying to obscure its existence from casual journalists, not erase it entirely from the memory of the population. Art's data had been correct. There were other SEC units on this moon. The map showed logos from 5 bond companies that offered SEC units, including my company, at 7 of the most remote installations where exploration for mineral veins was still ongoing. They would be there to defend the claim from theft and to keep the miners and other employees from injuring each other as part of the bond guarantee. No SEC units would travel through the port except as inert cargo in transport boxes or repair cubicles, so that was one less thing to worry about. My altered configuration might fool humans and augmented humans, but not other SEC units. If they saw me, they would alert their SEC systems. They wouldn't have a choice, and they wouldn't want one. If anybody knows how dangerous rogue SEC units are, it's other SEC units. That was when I felt the ping. I told myself I'd mistaken it for something else. Then it happened again. That's a big uh-oh. Something was looking for SEC units, not just bots, specifically SEC units. And it was close. It hadn't pinged me directly, though if I'd had a working governor module, I would have been compelled to answer. 3 humans approached the table my clients were sitting at. Rami whispered into Terfeed, "That's Tlacy. I didn't expect her to come herself." 2 of the humans were large and male, and one of them lengthened his stride to reach the table. Maro had seen him, and from the look on her face, I knew this was not going to be a greeting. Scan showed he was armed. I moved between him and the table. I put a hand up at his chest height and said, "Stop." On most contracts, this was as far as I was allowed to go with a human until they made physical contact, but you'd be surprised how often this works if you do it right. Though that was when I was wearing my armor with the helmet opaqued. Standing here in normal human clothes with my human face showing made it a whole different thing. But it wasn't like he could hurt me by hitting me, and he hadn't drawn his weapon yet. I could have torn through him like tissue paper. He didn't know that, but he must have been able to tell from my face that I wasn't afraid of him. I checked the security camera to see what I looked like and decided I looked bored. That wasn't unusual, because I almost always looked bored while I was doing my job. It was just impossible to tell when I was in my armor. He visibly regrouped and said, "Who the fuck are you?" My clients had shoved their chairs back and were on their feet. Rami said, "This is our security consultant." He stepped back and glanced uncertainly at the other 2, the 2nd male human bodyguard, and Tlacy, who was an augmented human female. I dropped my arm but didn't move. I had clear shots at all three of them, but that was a worst-case scenario. For me, at least. Humans can miss a lot of little clues, but me being able to fire energy weapons from my arms would be something of a red flag. I diverted just enough attention to scan the security camera feeds for whatever it was that had pinged me. I caught an image on a camera across the public area, near one of the entrance tunnels. The figure standing near the edge of the seating area didn't match what I was expecting to see, and I had to review it again before I understood. It wasn't wearing armor, and its physical configuration didn't match SEC unit standard. It had a lot of hair, silver and blue and purple on the ends, pulled back and braided like Tapan's, but in a much more complicated pattern. Its facial features were different from mine, but all units' features are different, assigned randomly based on the human-cloned material that's used to make our organic parts. Its arms were bare, and there was no metal showing and no gun ports. This was not a SEC unit. I was looking at a sex bot.
That is not the official designation, Art said.
The official designation is comfort unit, but everybody knows what that means. Sex bots aren't allowed to walk around in human areas without orders, any more than murder bots. Someone must have sent it here. Art poked me hard enough to make me twitch. I snapped out of it and ran my recording back a little to catch up on what was happening. Tlacy had stepped forward.
And just why do you need a security consultant?
Rami took a breath. I hit her feed, secured a private connection between Ter, Tapan, and Maro, and told her, don't answer that. Don't mention the attempt on the shuttle. Just stick to business. It was an impulse. Tlacy had come here expecting an angry confrontation. That was why she had brought armed bodyguards. We had an advantage now. We weren't dead, and they were off balance, and we wanted to keep them that way. Rami let the breath out, tapped my feet in acknowledgement, then said,
we're here to talk about our files.
Maro, who had realized what I was trying to do, told Rami, keep going. Don't even let them sit down. Sounding more confident, Rami continued,
deleting our personal work was not part of our employment contract, but we'll agree to your proposal that we return our signing bonus in exchange for our files.
On the security cameras, I watched the sex bot turn and leave the public area via the tunnel directly behind it. Tlacy said,
the entire bonus.
She clearly hadn't expected them to agree. Maro leaned forward. We opened an account with Umro to hold the funds. We can transfer it to you as soon as you give us the files. Tlacy's jaw moved as she spoke in her private feed. The two bodyguards eased back. Tlacy stepped over and took a chair at my client's table. After a moment, Rami sat down, and Tapan and Maro followed suit. I kept part of my attention on the negotiation and went back to the public feed. I started pulling historical data, looking for any irregular activity around the time of my contract here. While my clients were talking, and while I sorted through the data with Art peering over my shoulder again, I was watching the security cameras. I noted two more potential threats enter the area. Both were augmented humans. I had noted three potential threats already sitting at adjacent tables. All three exhibited a curious lack of attention toward the confrontation occurring near the center of the seating area. The other humans and augmented humans in the immediate area had watched it with open or surreptitious curiosity. Art poked me. I see it, I told it. The search had turned up a series of notices posted around the right time frame. They were warnings that changes in shipments of raw materials and supplies to outlying installations would cause diversions in the passenger tube routes. The tube was a small-scale transit system that took passengers around the port and service centers and had private lines going out to the closer mining installations. Later notices mentioned a new route that had been constructed to compensate for the diversion. That was it. Reading between the lines, you could see that the service contractors had had to build a new tube route to bypass the tunnels that had led to a mining installation that had abruptly closed. That had to be the site of Ganaka Pit.
Other pit closures had been accompanied by local interest articles and excessive social feed interest in bankruptcy filings and the effect on the associated service companies. There was nothing like that about this closure. Someone had paid to have those postings deleted from the public feed. The conversation was concluding. Tlacy stood up, nodded to my clients, and walked away from the table. Rami's expression was a grimace of doubt. Maro looked grim, and Tapan somewhere between confused and angry. I closed the search and stepped over to the table. Watching Tlacy and her bodyguards leave, Rami said, "It was a bad idea to come here." Tapan protested, "She said tomorrow." Maro shook her head. "It's more lies. She isn't going to give us the files. She could have done it here if she was going to do it. She could have done it over the comm while we were on the transit ring." She looked up at me. "I wasn't sure I believed you about the shuttle, but now..." I was keeping track of my potential threat list on the security cameras. "We need to go," I told them. "We'll talk about this somewhere else." As we left, one potential threat got up to follow us. I tapped Art to keep an eye on the others, just in case they weren't innocent bystanders so deep in their feeds they really hadn't noticed anything. I had marked a few possible routes on the station map, and my favorite one was through a pedestrian tunnel that curved out away from the main living areas. There were various accesses along it leading to different tube stations, but it was not a popular route. I tapped Rami's feed and told her to take it toward the interchange where the largest hotel was. Listening in, Maro whispered, "We can't afford that one." "You won't be staying there," I told them on the feed. The brochure on the public feed promised a high-security lobby area and a fast tube access to the public shuttle slots. We reached the tunnel and started down it. It was close to 10 meters wide and 4 meters high, well lit enough for walking down the center, but the sides were shadowy with darkened, branching tunnels. There were security cameras, but the system monitoring them was not sophisticated. The company would have shit itself over the possible danger to bonded clients and the missed opportunity to data mine conversations. There were other humans in the tunnel. Some miners in coveralls and jackets with logos from the various installations, but most were in civilian work clothes, either techs or workers for the support companies. They moved quickly and stayed in groups. After 8 minutes of walking, most of the other humans in the tunnel had turned off to one of the tube access points. I sent through the feed, "Just keep walking. Don't stop. I'll meet you in the lobby." I dropped back into one of the darker branching tunnels. My clients kept moving and didn't look back at me, though I could tell Tapan wanted to. On the cameras, I watched potential threat slash new target make his way up the tunnel, walking quickly. He was joined by two new humans, now designated Target 2 and Target 3. They passed me, and I came out of the tube access and followed at a distance. I scanned them for energy weapons and found no readings. All three targets wore jackets and pants with deep side pockets. I marked 7 locations where knives or extendable batons could be carried. When they caught sight of my clients, the targets slowed down but continued to reduce the distance between them. I knew they were probably reporting to someone on their feed asking for instructions. Whoever it was didn't have control of the security cameras, at least not yet. I followed, watching the targets through my eyes, through the security cameras, watching myself to make sure I wasn't drawing attention, that no one was following me. Art kept quiet, though I could tell it was interested in watching me work. Then the last group of miners between me and the targets turned into a tube access. We were in a bend of the tunnel, and there was no one between my clients and the next bend, some 50 meters ahead, and the security cameras showed me the tunnel was empty behind me. I needed to get this over with. I turned into the tube access behind the miners. I stopped at the top of the tube access while the miners boarded the capsule. The door hissed as it closed, and the capsule moved away. On security camera view, Target 2's jaw moved, indicating that he was speaking sub-vocally in his feed. Then the camera's feed cut off. I turned the corner back into the tunnel and started to run. It was a calculated risk, as I couldn't move at top speed without revealing I wasn't human.
but I managed to arrive just as Target One reached Rami and grabbed the sleeve of her jacket. I broke his arm and slammed an elbow into his chin, then swung him into Target Two, who had turned toward me with the knife he had been approaching Marrow with. Target Two accidentally, I'm guessing here, maybe they just didn't care for each other, stabbed Target One. Target Two staggered sideways, and I dropped Target One and broke Target Two's kneecap. Target Three had time to lift his baton and now hit me across the left side of my head and shoulder, which, granted, annoyed me a little, but I've had haulerbots hit me harder than that by accident. I blocked the second blow with my left arm, snapped his collarbone with one punch, and smashed his hip with another. He was lucky I wasn't a lot annoyed. All three targets were on the floor, and Two was the only one who was still conscious, though he was curled up and whimpering. I turned to my clients. Rami had a hand over her mouth. Marrow was frozen in place, staring, and Tapan had thrown her hands up in the air. I said in the feed, "Go to the hotel, wait for me in the lobby. Don't run, walk." Marrow came out of shock first. She nodded hard, caught Rami's arm, and poked Tapan's shoulder. Rami turned to go, but Tapan said, "Security?" I knew what she was asking. They told somebody to cut the cameras. That's why you need to leave now. The public feed up on the transit ring had said there was no overall security, but the security companies for the different service installations and contractors were supposed to take responsibility for the public areas nearest their territory. This spot had obviously been carefully calculated to be out of range of any immediate assistance by whoever had helped the targets by cutting the camera feed. I wasn't expecting an immediate response, but we did need to move relatively quickly. Rami whispered, "Come on," and they started away, walking fast, but not running. I turned to the target that was still conscious and pressed down on the artery in his neck until he passed out. I started away, walking at a normal pace. I was deep enough into the camera system to delete the temporary storage on the cameras ahead of and behind the deactivated camera. That would help obscure the issue for anybody trying to figure out what had happened. But Tlacy had seen me, and she would know. I was just hoping the kids listened to me this time. I reached the interchange where various access tunnels and tube stations met, with a scatter of pop-up stands selling packaged food, feed interfaces, toiletries, and other things humans liked. It wasn't crowded, but there was a steady flow of foot traffic. The hotel entrance was on the far side. The lobby was built on various platforms overlooking a holo sculpture of an open chasm filled with a giant crystalline structure growing out of the walls. From the notations in the feed, it was supposed to be educational, but I had serious doubts about whether the mines on Ravi Hyrule looked like that, especially after the mining bots got to them. My clients were on the same platform as the check-in area, near the railing around the sculpture's artificial chasm, sitting on a round, backless couch thing that looked more like a decorative object than furniture. I sat on my heels in front of them. Rami said, "They were going to kill us!" "Again," I said. Rami bit her lip. "I believed you about the shuttle. I believed you." "But now you've seen it," I said. I knew what he meant. There is a huge difference between knowing something happened and seeing the reality of it, even for sec units. Marrow rubbed her eyes. "Yeah, we were idiots. Tlacy was never going to let us give her the bonus for our files." "No, she wasn't," I agreed. Rami nudged her. "You were right." Marrow looked more depressed.
"I didn't want to be."
Tapan said miserably, "We're wrecked." Rami put an arm around her. "We're alive." T looked at me. "What do we do now?" I said, "Let me get you out of here.